I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. It's Tuesday, August 17th, and we are doing what we affectionately call Nerd Week or Analytics Week. And joining us to break down the AFC and NFC East, someone who is with us. Actually, I believe you're on last year, right? Was it you 2 years ago? And Steve was last year, maybe. Sam Monson from PFF. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Hope you're doing well. You excited for football again?
Yeah, finally have like new things to talk about. It's amazing. Okay, it's only been preseason so far, but just the idea of having actual things happen that mean you can change your analysis from the last like 6 months of just saying the same thing.
Yeah,
it's fantastic.
Right. Well, you know, I was doing some best ball drafts and noticed that, and I had forgotten because we didn't have preseason last year, and I'd noticed that like Jerry Jeudy, because of his performance in the preseason, had shot up like 15 or 20 spots in ADP. People, it's because we miss it. People don't know how to react to this, to the preseason stuff. I think we forgot how, like, these training camp tweets are so thirsty. Like, Brian Edwards is a combo of Randy Moss and Terrell Owens, and, you know, stuff like that. It's kind of amazing to see, actually.
But I think a big part of it is that, like, starvation period of months of nothing, so that the slightest like first sign of anything and you immediately want to react, you know, way in the other direction, just because it's a new data point. It's the only new thing you've seen in months of like the same take on a guy.
Well, Justin Fields is a good example. He played well. I mean, he ran the football into the end zone untouched, and people are like, and then, you know, he makes a throw to Jesse James, like an uncovered Jesse James,
right,
a defender who fell down. It's like, well, that's it. Matt Nagy has no choice now. He probably should start Justin Fields, but I digress. Well, as I mentioned, we'll talk about AFC and NFC East. I don't want to get us too veered off in the wrong direction. By the way, of course, Sam, the lead NFL analyst at Pro Football Focus and host of the PFF NFL podcast, which you should listen to at PFF_Sam on Twitter. And I would assume that you have some sort of PFF promotional thing that you can promote or tell people where to go to get a subscription. If you like professional football and you fancy yourself an intelligent person, a PFF subscription is a must.
Yeah, I think our current sale is done, though. I think we're back to regular prices. But keep an eye on PFF.com. You'll see all the flash sales that we do. And otherwise, you know, just sign up for full price. It's worth it. I promise.
Yeah, pay full price. Support Sam and Steve. And I think actually Steve is going to be on the show tomorrow. We'll have much more analytics talk throughout the week. Yeah, that's right. Double dipping into PFF. You guys are fun to – you guys are just fun to talk to. And apparently a better basketball duo than Brady Quinn and Pete Prisco, right?
Well, we never got to prove it, but you know, we were heading in that direction. We liked our chances.
You know what? That was right before COVID hit, wasn't it?
We were planning that out, and then COVID struck, and the whole world got knocked sideways.
It feels like 42 years ago. Let's talk about the AFC East, because I am curious your thoughts on this division as a whole. I am of the opinion, Sam, that the Bills over under, which was 10.5, maybe it's up to 11, in that range, is way too low. And I think that their price to win the division at -150 is way too cheap. Now, Bill Belichick scares me because he always does. I'm not as worried about the Dolphins as a lot of other people are. And the Jets, I don't think, are going to be a huge challenge to Buffalo to try and repeat as division champs. Am I am I off my rocker in being that confident in Buffalo?
I don't think you're crazy, but I do think it's going to be tougher for the Bills this year than it was last year. I mean, the Patriots made sweeping changes. They had the biggest spending spree like in NFL history. And, you know, usually when teams do that, it's not necessarily a good thing. And I think it probably speaks to some, you know, rot that has set in with the Patriots over the past few years. But it's hard to argue that that will make them significantly better this year, particularly when you add in the guys they're getting back. And then the prospect that, hey, Mac Jones actually gives you an alternative, a quarterback, if Cam Newton doesn't play any better than he did last season. So I think the Patriots will be better than they were a year ago. The Dolphins might not be any better, but I doubt they'll be much worse. And they were a pretty good team. And then, you know, overreaction to 15 snaps of preseason. If Zach Wilson is good, the Jets suddenly have a quarterback and they could get a lot better in a hurry. And the other thing about Buffalo is that, look, Josh Allen was incredible last year, but can he keep that at that same level? And also the Bills were pretty healthy last year in terms of sort of key pieces going down. So they need to stay that lucky as well. It's not a guarantee, but I could easily see how this is a much tougher year for them than it was last season.
So with Josh Allen, he kind of broke any sort of statistical modeling that you could do for quarterbacks last season. He went from never completed, I don't believe, in his entire high school, college, or professional career, more than 60% of his passes in a single season, to suddenly completing almost 70% of his passes, 37 touchdowns, 10 picks, you know, 4,500 yards. Was that when you look back on that leap that he made, was there anything that stood out to you why he made the leap? Is there any evidence that you could see where you're like, oh, we should have seen that coming? Or do you feel like
shaking your head?
I guess I'm just sort of wondering if this is just do we think this is an outlier? Is there any regression coming? Just your general thoughts on Allen's big step forward and where he'll go from there.
I think Josh Allen might be the root cause of a lot of quarterback swings and misses in the draft in the next few years. Like people trying to find the next Josh Allen. He went from being literally the least accurate quarterback in the NFL, according to like adjusted completion rate, to being, I think, sixth last year. He was the worst graded quarterback in the NFL on the deep ball in 2019, and then went to being one of the best in 2020. Like the size of a leap he took between those two seasons is as big, I think, as any quarterback we've ever seen year to year. It must be pretty much unprecedented. It's not something that was obviously coming. He definitely, I think, took a step forward between his rookie year and his second year. He was actually grading pretty well on sort of everything other than the deep ball. And going into last year, we were kind of saying, well, if he just gets average at deep passing, there is a big step to be made, but it wasn't as big as the one that he ended up taking. And I think, like, to expect that to happen to any other quarterback ever is just optimistic. And B, I think it is a real question about whether he can maintain that kind of level. Like, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He had a PFF grade above 90. He was right up there with the Aaron Rodgers, the Patrick Mahomes of the world, the Tom Brady's. But that's not that's rare air. That's a difficult place to stay for any period of time. And that's his next challenge. It's like, okay, you hit that level. Now make sure you can repeat it.
Yeah, he was top four in the NFL in terms of 20 plus plays, and up there as well in the 40 plus plays. It's almost, you wonder, and it's so weird because it was a COVID offseason. There's no preseason. There's, you know, minimal time to, you know, actually work with your teammates. And his number one weapon is a guy that they trade for in the offseason, is Stephon Diggs. And I was shocked at how quickly those two guys develop the chemistry that they did, because you could see, and it helped Allen a ton out. It helped Allen out a ton, because they would diagnose and, you know, non-verbally communicate whether it was man or zone once they got up there. And then Diggs would work his routes based on that. And to be able to put that all together and to get on that same page that quickly in that offseason, I mean, the whole thing is just impossible to see.
Yeah. And it totally sort of validated everything that Diggs wanted. You know, this was a guy who, the Vikings offense was pretty good, but Diggs was getting frustrated because the ceiling was like 140 targets. You know, he was never going to see more than that over a season in that offense. And he knew he was capable of more. And he knew that it would also help the offense if he got more. He goes to Buffalo, the target number spikes through the roof, and he has a career year. Josh Allen has a career year because of it. And just the whole thing was exactly what he'd been talking about for that entire time. And yeah, like it gave Josh Allen a target that gets open everywhere. So it was already, I think, an underrated group of wide receivers. Cole Beasley, John Brown, these are guys that are impact players and good at getting open. And then you bring in Diggs, who gets open everywhere and sort of gives you an extra weapon at each layer of the defense.
Yeah. The Patriots had no weapons last year for Cam Newton at all. And so, as you pointed out, they went out and spent on it. By the way, I'm big on the Bills over. I will say this, and I know people who listen to this podcast are probably sick of me talking about it, but I am legitimately concerned about from my wallet perspective, I'm concerned about the vaccination issue with Buffalo and with Minnesota. Like, if Josh Allen misses two or four games, I'm probably not getting that over. So that's the one red flag that I've got lingering.
It is. Yeah, it is legit. I mean, the Vikings, look at this last week against Denver, right? The Vikings rested everybody of consequence. Their second and third teams were annihilated. Like, they are terrible. And the Vikings have a greater chance than other teams that their second and third team are going to have to play this season because, you know, a lot of guys on that team are not vaccinated. And Arif Hassan was sort of reporting the guys that weren't playing and were in masks, indicating that they're not vaccinated.
Correct.
And it was like all their best players. Like, it's not just the number, it's who they are. The Vikings' best players are the ones that aren't getting vaccinated. So they've already lost their quarterback room for, you know, a week essentially of practice and that kind of thing. That's a very real concern for betting over unders.
Yeah, and again, it has nothing to do with the virus or the actual vaccination. Like, if Josh Allen isn't vaccinated, in a hypothetical here, and he is in close contact, he will miss time. And that's the concern that I currently have. And just a warning for people, if you're betting on overs or you're betting on player props and all that. But as we point out, the Patriots, I believe Bill Belichick, while not open, like, he's been pretty firm about his stance, where he seems to indicate that he, I think, expects everybody to be vaccinated. And I would think part of the reason is that Bill Belichick will take any advantage that he can have over the other people in the NFL. And he probably believes that to be one, because they won't miss games if everybody's vaccinated. They went out and spent a ton of money in free agency. They get Nelson Aguilar. They get Kendrick Bourne. They get Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry. And then, of course, Matt Judon on the defensive side. Do you believe this was Bill Belichick building? Do you think he was finding an economic angle because most people weren't spending, or is this a rage spending spree over Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl somewhere else?
I think, honestly, they just needed to do it. I mean, they were in a hole in terms of talent. Talent had eroded from this roster, and it wasn't as good as it used to be. And unlike previous years where that had happened before, like, you know, it's so hard to sort of assemble and maintain an elite talent level roster in the NFL that you almost have to go in cycles. And the Patriots have done that in the past. They've had rosters that weren't that great, but when that happened, they had Tom Brady to, you know, maintain a 12-win baseline, and it didn't really matter. And then Tom Brady in the playoffs kicks to another gear, and some of these rosters that weren't that great were still in the Super Bowl or in the AFC Championship game or whatever. Now, with no Tom Brady, if you go on a low ebb of roster talent for the Patriots, you're just not getting anywhere. You're not even making the playoffs, let alone threatening for the Super Bowl. So I think they looked at this, and they'd kind of been through the cap hell phase and now had the money to spend. It probably helped that nobody else was spending big money, and they just let rip. Like, they had a bunch of positions that they really needed to make serious inroads into, and they threw money at the problem.
Yeah. I guess the follow-up would be, do you think it'll work?
Yeah, to an extent. I don't think it's going to be a cure-all. It's not going to turn the Patriots back into the Super Bowl team that we expect them to be if they haven't got a quarterback. Like, if Cam Newton doesn't play any better than last year, all the spending in the world isn't going to propel them back to the Super Bowl. But I do think they'll be better in several obvious areas, and they do have, you know, receiving weaponry to work from, which they haven't for the past couple of years. And that's huge. Whether what this sort of offense ends up looking like, with the two tight ends being paid big money, with a fullback that they still like to use versus pretty much any other team in the NFL, I think that's still up in the air, but it's better than last year, right? Like, they actually have players that you think can get open and make some plays.
And two guys, I think, too, I don't want to It's always weird when you make a Gronk Aaron Hernandez comparison to for multiple reasons. But like Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry are sort of like a poor man's version of that, where Jonnu is the guy where you can utilize him in the backfield. You can have him, you know, you can, he's sort of a Swiss Army knife that you can move around. And Henry is really that traditional inline guy who's a great red zone threat. It feels like Belichick. And, you know, when they did, when he did draft Gronk and Hernandez in the draft, I mean, it feels like he's been trying for the last 2 years. He did this with, the two tight ends, Dalton Keene and Asiasi, who they drafted last year. They were they've been trying to figure out how to get that two tight end thing going. And finally, he just said, F it. I'm buying them. I'm not developing these guys. I don't have time to do that. Brady's winning Super Bowls. I'm buying these guys off the street.
Right, which is kind of where they've been for the last X number of years, just with receivers generally, right? Like they haven't been able to draft these guys. I'm endlessly fascinated that N'Keal Harry was the guy that like tempted them back into the first round.
He's ever taken a wide receiver in the first round was N'Keal Harry.
Right,
by the way, Debo, and I screamed this before the draft, Debo Samuel is like everything you would want in a Patriots wide receiver or a Bill Belichick player, and he took N'Keal Harry over him. That makes no damn sense.
And for a while, they knew that they weren't great at drafting receivers, right? They'd swung and missed on a bunch of them, and then they just went, screw it, we're just going to trade them instead. Like, instead of drafting a guy in the first round, take that first round pick, throw it at somebody else, and bring in a Brandon Cooks, and that's how we'll do this. And then for some reason, N'Keal Harry was the guy that made them go, oh yeah, this is the guy we need to go back in to the draft to get, despite the fact that the guy's college tape showed that he could not separate.
Right.
And if you can't separate in the Pac-12, you're sure as hell not going to separate in the NFL. Sure. So that's been a disaster. But tight end was a similar kind of thing. They've struggled to draft those guys as well since the Rodgers or since the Gronk Hernandez thing, and so they're taking the same approach. Instead of trading, let's throw free agent money at them. We'll make two different guys the third best paid tight end in the NFL. And it's not crazy. If you're struggling to draft a certain position, go for a more sure thing if you've got the resources.
Yeah. I mean, spend your money. As my wife likes to say, erroneously, I don't know why she thinks that this is appropriate. She's like, you got to spend money to make money. I'm like, that is a business saying.
Doesn't apply to shopping.
Yes, exactly, Sam. She's like, I can't return this dress. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, well, I bought it. It was like on sale and I just can't send it back. I was like, well, that's no good. She's like, well, you got to spend money to make money. I'm like, that is not applicable in this particular time and place. The Miami Dolphins are the Dolphins. I feel like the Dolphins are sort of starting to become trendy in terms of people want them to win. Everyone was this weird swing on Tua where everybody was defending Tua before the draft, and then he didn't play very well last year. You know, he's in and out for Fitzpatrick, and everybody bails on Tua. They wanted to trade for Watson. But now, like, this increasing drumbeat where people are intrigued by Tua maybe taking a huge step. Is there anything you guys have looked at in terms of the data, in terms of what you expect from the Dolphins, where you could see a leap forward for Tua? Or are you also out on Tua?
It's amazing. It took like 5 weeks from everybody to go, yeah, Tua's the second best quarterback in this draft. Oh, I'm out on Tua. Like that was ugly.
I hated Tua all along. Hated him.
And he didn't even play that badly. Like, it's not like he was a complete disaster. He didn't, you know, he wasn't Nathan Peterman out there. He just, like, relative to Joe Burrow, who looked great, and Justin Herbert, who was setting rookie records, Tua didn't look fantastic. And I think his thing is, the biggest issue with Tua was a lack of, you know, big time throws, the more aggressive, the bigger plays in PFF's grading system, the ones that are deeper down the field generally or into tighter windows. Those just weren't there for him last year, the lowest big time throw rate in the entire NFL. And that's why, like, to me, if you read stories this preseason, this offseason about Tua throwing a ton of interceptions in practice, that's good. Like, that means they are trying to dial up that aggression. And if they need to get to week one and rein it back in, fine. But, like, you're not going to get from lowest in the NFL to somewhere in the middle by just asking him to, you know, push it forward a little bit. Send them all the way in the other direction and then find the middle ground. And I thought we saw a little bit of that in the first preseason. He took a couple of aggressive shots. I think that's huge. If Tua can be more aggressive in the NFL, and it's not like he was ever hyper aggressive in college, but he was certainly willing to push the ball downfield and throw you know, throw at those receivers because they were great. If we can just see a bit more of that, I think there's still a good quarterback there in Tua, and he doesn't need to be phenomenal, you know, particularly if these receivers are as good as they could be. They've got contested catch guys, they've got guys that can make plays, and then you add in, you know, players like Jalen Waddle to bring the speed and the run after the catch skills. That should be a good receiving group to play with. If Tua can just get a little bit more aggressive and ballsy, then I think they could have a really good offense.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, you said that. I believe early is the first training camp practice. People, Dolphins got beat guys were wigging out because Tua's throwing all these picks. But they came out and said that, like, you know, they're like, we're trying to get him to throw the ball deep and into tighter windows. I think they're doing what you're saying he want to do. The other thing I sort of wonder about Tua is, you know, I mean, this is sort of basic physiology, I suppose, but, you know, when you play football and you're a quarterback, you know, you're using your hips to throw, like, your routine, you know, like, that's a big part. I sort of wonder if his inability, like his hesitancy to go downfield or inability to hit downfield might have had something to do with the fact that his hip injury was, you know, preventing him from, like, that full rotation. Do you think there's any? I mean, I'm not a doctor nor a scientist, but
right. I mean, there could be. I look at it this way: like, there's no conceivable way that the hip injury could be an issue this year, but it could have been one last year. You know, yeah. It could have been taking a percentage off his play. So maybe it's going to be no different last year to this year, but there's definitely a chance that a year removed from that injury, you get a physically superior Tua. He's also had an entire offseason program, you know, to work on strength and conditioning at the NFL level. Again, that can only go in one direction. Like, maybe it has no effect whatsoever and he's exactly the same guy. On the other hand, maybe he is coming in with a, you know, a degree more just physical talent than he had this time 12 months ago.
All right. So both the Patriots and the Dolphins are at 9.5 wins on Caesars. That's what I'm looking at. Where would you lean in terms of those two teams being above five? Because we can't really, I'm sure you're annoyed by the 17 game thing too. But it's like, are they going to be above five? Of course, everybody's going to be above 500 or below. You can't be even. But 10 wins is probably putting you in the playoff mix. It is above the new 500 or whatever it is. Do you think, do you have either or both of those teams or neither of those teams finishing at 10 wins, you think, in this coming season?
Yeah, we just kind of ran through all the over-unders in our podcast, and I came away from this convinced that, you know, Vegas actually knows what they're doing. Like, all these lines were actually really difficult to pick an over-under on, and the Dolphins and Patriots, I think, are two, you know, right on the money. Miami, I think, could be better than last year, but they do have things working against them. You know, they were absurdly healthy last year in terms of, like, important players going down missing. That's probably not happening again, and if they get just average in that regard, it's going to be tougher. It also feels like last year was kind of a surprise to them, right? Like, they didn't expect to be as good as they were last year, and now that changes expectations, right? Now you're supposed to be better going this year. So you need this step forward from Tua. And if it isn't a big one, you're going to be working against a lot of things. That offensive line also doesn't look good and didn't get dramatically better on paper. They're kind of relying on, you know, year two and three jumps from those offensive linemen, which happens sometimes, but not always. And if it doesn't, the offensive line will be a problem as well. So Miami, I might lean under just because there's a lot working against them. The Patriots, I could see bouncing back, though. Like, they're getting players back. They added a ton of talent. I don't have a huge amount of confidence in Cam Newton taking a step forward, but all of a sudden, like, Mac Jones looks like he will be more pro-ready than I think people expected him to be. You know, his calling card coming out as a prospect was mental processing time and just being able to command the offense, get through your progression, hit the right guy quickly. And that's something the rookies struggle with, right? It takes time to get that for a new offense in the NFL and to make that adjustment. I mean, it's only preseason week one, but they loaded him up with a lot and he did not look overawed or didn't get slowed down by it. His processing speed was still quick, efficient. If he can do that, I mean, he's going to take that job sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I want, as a longtime Cam truther and Cam fan, I want Cam to bounce back and play well. I thought he looked good early in the season before he left and got COVID. But I am hesitant to assume that Cam can keep Mac Jones at bay. It feels like Belichick And I heard maybe there was like some hesitancy, like Belichick's like, oh, Mac fell to us, I have to draft him now. But I think the results that he's gotten so far and what he's seen from Mac Jones, I think he's been very pleased. And I agree with you. I think he'll be in there at some point. The Jets very quickly are 6.5. I am just going to take, or it's either 6 or 6.5. There's no way I'm taking the over with a rookie quarterback starting 16 games, no veteran backup there. And while I think that Joe Douglas is doing a good job finding some blue chip talents, that roster to me is a ways off. Agree.
It is. Yeah. And also the biggest thing working against them, I think, is that division. Like, yeah, even if the Jets are significantly better this year, conceivably the other three teams in the division are all chasing double digit wins, which just means your wins are getting a lot harder and thinner on the ground to come by. So I could easily see the Jets like being significantly better than last year with Zach Wilson looking the real deal, with them still only winning 4 or 5 games.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we will rip through the NFC East. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Okay, so the NFC East, would the Jets win the NFC East? Would you pick the Jets to win the NFC East if they were in that division? Because the NFC East is trash. It's pretty trash.
Is it? I mean, it was trash last year.
But it was trash last year, yes.
I think Washington and Dallas could both be pretty good this year.
Okay. I actually like Washington a lot, and I took them when they signed Fitzpatrick. When you come out and say this after the fact, it sounds kind of stupid, but when they signed Ryan Fitzpatrick, I bet on them to win the division. Yes. Because who wouldn't do that? But I do feel like if you look at Washington, we talked about this on our podcast, on the podcast last week, but they were the worst offense in football last year, statistically speaking. And Ryan Fitzpatrick is probably just average, but average is better than the worst, right?
Yeah, look, Ryan Fitzpatrick gets altogether way too much disrespect for how good a player he actually is. Like, Ryan Fitzpatrick, as you said, is an average NFL quarterback. Since the start of 2017, I think, he's literally 15th in PFF's grading. Like, he's slap bang in the middle. Now, okay, he gets there via a roller coaster, right? There's going to be amazing games. There's going to be terrible games. But it's going to shake out to, like, league average. And league average, when you have a really good roster, is a pretty good thing to have. Like, you don't need, look, Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl playing way below league average play at quarterback, but Denver had the best roster in the NFL that year. So they were able to drag the like decomposing corpse of Peyton Manning all the way to his second championship. Like,
they had the corpse of Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler.
Right. And the thing is,
benched Manning for Osweiler, then benched Osweiler for the corpse.
And the thing is, there wasn't a difference between the two of them. Like, Brock Osweiler, who is a disaster as a quarterback, was not discernibly worse than Peyton Manning that year. So if you have a good enough roster, you can win with that. And I think Washington kind of took a look at this, surveyed the quarterback market this offseason, and went, we have no real shot at like a jump upgrade at a real franchise quarterback, at a guy that will be the solution for the next 10 years. But we have a shot at Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's not going to cost anything and can get us to the playoffs and might be able to win games if we catch, you know, the high ebb of the Fitzpatrick coaster. I think that's a really shrewd move. And it's like, we don't have to rely on him long-term, right? We'll do the same thing next year. Maybe next year, Marcus Mariota is available, or, you know, Carson Wentz gets kicked to the curb after a disaster in Indy. Like, we will be able to go from one viable veteran to another for 3 or 4 years until we stumble into a better opportunity somewhere. Like, yeah, teams have done that in the past, and I don't think it's a dumb way of doing it.
I would agree with you there. And I also like the idea of, to me, Washington, I don't know if there's a ton of value in this, in the division price. Now, there's still plus money, really, actually over 2-1. So maybe there still is. I think I got it like 4-1. I like the Washington over, though. 8.5 wins. Yep. I mean, Ron Rivera, you know, people like to, you know, he wasn't really ever riverboat. Like, that was sort of a fluke thing. Like, he wasn't actually using, you know, analytics to, he was just sort of guessing because he was about to get fired in Carolina. But he just has a high floor as a coach. Like, he's going to get you, you know, they're not going to win 4 or 5 games. He's going to find a way to winning 7, 8, 9 games with this roster. And I think, man, I look at this offense. You add De'Ami Brown and Curtis Samuel to a team with a pretty good offensive line. Fitzpatrick, a more aggressive quarterback. Terry McLaurin could turn into a top 5 or 10 wide receiver this year if he breaks out. And then Logan Thomas somehow, you know, morphing into a above average tight end after years of playing quarterback at Virginia Tech. And of course, this defense, very, very good.
Yeah, I mean, look at their record last year. We were the NFC East was a joke because it looked like somebody was going to win that division with like 5 wins for a big stretch. But yeah, Washington ends up coming through. They weren't that bad overall, and they had by far the worst quarterback situation in the NFL.
Yes.
An absolute disaster until Alex Smith came in, and Alex Smith didn't play well. Like, he just played better than Dwayne Haskins. He was still a bad quarterback as a starter, nowhere near what even Alex Smith's baseline is for his career. Incredible comeback story, but, you know, he didn't play that well on the one leg. So the jump from that quarterback situation to where they are with Fitzpatrick, I think, is huge. Plus, yeah, they upgraded everywhere else. Plus, Ron Rivera isn't going to be battling cancer for half the year.
kind of a big deal.
Right. I mean, if your head coach is legitimately, you know, trying to survive first and foremost, like, okay, I'll devise the game plan when I have a few minutes, but right now I've got to deal with some chemo.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That is probably a pretty significant edge coming back in their direction this year.
Oh, I agreed completely. So I take it you are on the over for Washington, and you think this is a 10-plus win team, right?
Yeah, I think this could be a much better team than people are giving them credit for.
And by the way, you know, they sort of ran into the buzzsaw that is Tom Brady in the playoffs too. You know, that team, Washington, could have potentially made some noise, and all they had was Taylor Heinicke left at quarterback. If they, you know, if that same team had Ryan Fitzpatrick at quarterback and, you know, didn't luck, you know, deal with the bad luck of drawing Tom Brady as a wild card, maybe they win a playoff game.
Right. Though, by the way, Taylor Heinicke had the highest PFF single game grade of any quarterback in the playoffs last year.
That's true. Really? That's amazing.
That was the best grade anybody had. This is a playoffs with Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, like these MVP candidates. The best game anybody had was Heinicke in that game.
What a legend, Taylor Heinicke. And he got paid for it too. Good for him. All right. So you mentioned Dallas. You like Dallas. You're high on Dallas this year as well. I understand it. My concerns are, well, I guess twofold. One, a defense could still stink this year, and I would expect that they are fantasy gold and that Dak is throwing the ball all over the place. The other concern I have, Sam, is that Dallas last year in the first couple of games where they got back in, they were close games because they scored a bunch of points late, but that offense didn't look good out of the gate. Are you worried at all that Mike McCarthy might just not know what he's doing?
I think the offense just has too much talent for it to matter almost. Like, they have so many good players. They have a mismatch at every receiver spot. They have arguably the best sort of trio of wide receivers in the NFL.
Yeah.
CD Lamb, if he takes the jump that he looks like he's taking this year, he could be their number one receiver immediately, giving them 2 number ones.
Yep.
And by the way, the third guy would be Michael Gallup, who's able to like roast Jalen Ramsey one-on-one on the outside. Like, that is a trio that's insane. Dak Prescott, if he gets back anywhere near the level he was playing at before he went down hurt, it's going to be one of the best offenses in the NFL. And then if the defense just gets back to just not being one of the worst in the NFL, like, it doesn't even have to be average. Below average would get that team to a level where they were able to like hang with everybody week to week and win most of the time, because the offense, I think, could be that special. The offensive line depth, I guess, is a little bit more worrisome than it's been in the past, but you still expect it to be okay. I think the biggest question mark is the defensive side of the ball, but I think offense will be good.
All right, so how is it, how would you, or can you even project a potential defensive breakout for that side of the roster? Because, I mean, you can add, I mean, obviously the addition of Micah Parsons helps, and DeMarcus Lawrence is a player. They invested a ton of draft picks into that side. It's just, it's hard for me to look at that defense and say, okay, this is a unit that's going to magically come together and be good or average.
One of the things that data sort of shown is the power of just changing scheme, you know. Ooh. And a lot of times when a defense is horrendous, the scheme is part of it. And last season, there was a lot of talk about how they were just being asked to do too much. It was too complicated. Everybody was sort of spending too much time thinking and not enough time actually doing. And that's changed. And it's not just change, but it's going to the other end of the spectrum, right? You've gone from one of the most complicated defenses in the NFL, apparently, to a system that's like prides itself almost on simplicity. It's like
Mike Nolan's defense is so complicated that it sucks everywhere. It's incredible.
Yeah, it just, everybody seizes up. Like, you can't be expected to deal with that much stuff. Whereas you go to a Dan Quinn type of defense where it's like, we're going to run basically one thing and do it really well. Now, okay, it's more complicated than that. There are more permutations and all those kinds of things, but it is, they are two ends of the spectrum in terms of complexity. And I think shifting from one to the other, given how bad things were at one extreme, could have a huge transformative effect on these players. And remember, like, there's a lot of good players in this defense. Like, Leighton Van Der Esch looked like the best linebacker in his class as a rookie. Jalen Smith at one point got handed a monster contract because he was playing so well. Those guys are both almost like afterthoughts at this point and maybe superseded on the depth chart. But there's a lot of players where you say, okay, if we give them a scheme that functions, these guys can be okay. I'm a little bit concerned about, you know, the interior of the defensive line in particular, yeah. But I do have confidence that defense can go from like one of the worst in the league to just below average. And if it does that, like, that's good enough for Dallas to be a contender, like, not a Super Bowl contending team, but definitely a playoff team.
Well, and that's a good point too, is that they don't need this defense to be elite. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be a top five, top 10 defense. I guess it could be a top 10 defense. Really, really unlikely. But to your point, if they're a top 20 defense or even a top 25 defense, they're probably, you know, they're automatically better than whatever they were last year. Oh, I do want to ask, because one of the running gags, I feel like, is the Mike McCarthy. Did he actually come to PFF?
Yeah.
No, he did, right?
He was in the building for like a whole day, sat down, got, you know, discussed all kinds of data, trends, all those kinds of things. Yeah, it was like a full sort of fact-finding mission for him.
Okay, dude, and I'm not. I always joke, because it's like the beginning of Hard Knocks. He's like, somebody give me that readout on the spectrometer GPS, and let me know what Dak did. It's like all right, Mike, we get it. You went to PFF. we went to analytics boot camp. Do you think he's actually? Do you think he and the Cowboys will actually embrace analytics in a functional way? Because it didn't feel like they were doing it. He didn't feel like he was actually, you know. He can say whatever he wants. Yeah, but I didn't feel like he was acting on it. You know, he wasn't walking the walk in games last year. Didn't he?
It's interesting. Like, that's, I think, one of the elements of all this, right? Is that everybody, one thing, not everybody in the building is going to buy into the same things, and to get the sort of real edge that some of the best teams in the NFL have, you need like total buy-in, right? You need everybody to be on the same page and all agreeing on the important parts. But the other thing is, like, it's one thing to embrace it and to think it's good and for everybody to buy into it. How do you implement it, right? How do you actually get it into your day-to-day way of doing things and your mechanisms and your systems and just how you're actually doing stuff? It's one thing to buy into it, and it's another thing to have set up a process where you can take advantage of it and then reap the benefits. And again, you can see the best teams in the NFL have figured that out and know how to get it into integrated into everything they're doing. I don't know if Dallas have or haven't. Like, I'm not close enough to that side of things. Sure. But that's potentially, you know, one area where there would be a disconnect, where everybody there buys into the ideas, but if they haven't figured out a way of stitching it all into everything they do, it's not going to have the impact they want it to.
Yeah, like you can talk all day about how you want your house to be clean, but if you don't actually clean your house, then it doesn't matter what kind of cleaning supplies you have. So you are on the over for the Cowboys and their win total, I would assume, based on your thought process here.
Yeah, I think so. I think that offense will be too good for them not to be reasonable. And then if the defense just takes a step forward, it's kind of like, you know, when Kansas City first got Mahomes, right? And it's like, yeah, that offense is going to be the best offense in the NFL every single year. But year one, the defense was so bad that eventually they were going to come unstuck and they couldn't win at all. And then the defense didn't get good. It just got not terrible. And that immediately propels Kansas City to being a Super Bowl team every year.
Yeah. So it's I always liken the Chiefs in 2019, I guess 2020 is when they won, but 2020, the Chiefs to the 2006 Colts, where it's this defense that it has players, but isn't very good, but then suddenly kind of got hot at the same time. That would be the pathway for the Cowboys, where, you know, you just sort of get lucky and you create some turnovers down the stretch and maybe you pull it off. Or maybe the 2009 Saints and all that Bounty Gate stuff. The New York Giants, people, you know, you do the radio hits and people are like, all right, well, tell us about the Giants. And I try to do this cautiously because I'm not suggesting that Daniel Jones is going to have this breakout. But I think you mentioned the deep ball accuracy with Josh Allen. He fixed that. It's a clear area of concern that he fixes, and he fixes his general accuracy, and suddenly he takes a huge leap forward. Do you think it's possible that Daniel Jones could fix his turnover issue and take a big step forward, or is he just baby Jameis Winston?
I'm so torn on Daniel Jones because I didn't like him as a prospect coming into the NFL. I think he's fairly comfortably exceeded what I thought he was capable of, and I now think he's underrated. I think people are dumping on him because...
Plot twist.
Like, his box score numbers were terrible, right? Like, he had the same number of touchdowns as Dak Prescott managed in like 4.5 games in the entire season. And people look at that and they're like, well, Daniel Jones sucks. Okay, but he actually played pretty well. Not like hugely well, but he took like a 10-point jump in his PFF grade. He was doing a lot of things that people didn't necessarily think him capable of. The receiving core didn't help him out a ton. I think they've added talent to that team. I think Jones is potentially primed for another step forward, but I don't think we're even going to see it because that offensive line is so bad that it might not matter, right? And the biggest issue is that the biggest flaw Daniel Jones has is, sure, it's turnovers, but it's also he's got that like Joe Flacco obliviousness in the pocket thing.
Where he
just doesn't feel what the pocket is doing around him.
And suddenly then he's like splayed out, the ball's flying. Yeah.
Right. And then even worse than Joe Flacco, not only does he not sort of feel it happening, but when it happens, the ball comes out. So it's even worse. And that's bad enough like anytime, but it's even worse when your offensive line is garbage. And you're going to see a ton of those plays. And every time you kind of make it worse by lingering in the pocket and not feeling it coming, it has potentially catastrophic results. So I think there's a good chance we're going to come out at the end of the season and be like, well, Daniel Jones is a bust, time to press the reset button. But it's not his fault. Like, it's just, he doesn't have a shot this year.
So is he one of those guys where because if that's how this plays out, and Dave Gettleman, I would presume if they don't win 9 games, Dave Gettleman probably is getting fired. I don't know. The Giants ownership loves Gettleman for some reason. And if he's fired, a new GM is coming in and probably moving on from Daniel Jones. So you could see him maybe popping up in another spot and playing well. Come around on the prospect a little bit, but don't buy the setting helping him out.
Yeah, the chance that the Panthers took on Sam Darnold this offseason, I would be all on board with taking on Daniel Jones next offseason. Like, if you don't have a quarterback, if your plan A went to hell this season and you need to pull a rabbit out of the hat, I would definitely Washington, right? The idea of you can just go from veteran to veteran for like 5 straight years until you stumble into something better. If Washington ends up rolling the dice on Daniel Jones next offseason, like, that could pay massive dividends if they're still really good.
Suffice to say, you were on the Giants under then, I would assume.
Yeah.
Under 7 is low, man. I mean, that in a 17-game season, that is low. They were in the divisional hunt a little bit last year for whatever that's worth, but you know, I want to buy into Daniel Jones, but I'm sort of in the same boat as you are. I don't trust Jason Garrett. I don't trust that offensive line. And if, you know, with a team like Washington, and, you know, we have to assume Philly will be I don't actually. Maybe Philly might suck. I can't get on board with the Giants over as much as I'm trying to trick myself into doing it.
I think the Giants defense might be pretty good, but it's just that's never mattered less, you know, than today's NFL. Like if your defense is good, it's not going to do anything if your offense is a disaster.
Yeah, absolutely not. The Eagles are sort of kind of flailing in the wind a little bit, over under 6.5 wins. And there are rumors that of Deshaun Watson going to Philly. If he was not suspended and that happened, this number would clearly change. But as it stands right now, it looks like it's Jalen Hurts and Jalen Reagor and Quez Watkins here to save the day. Do you see anything you like, anything to love or hate about this Philly team in general?
I mean, I think there is a good receiving core in there to be created. They just need to figure out how the pieces all go together. But I think the same thing was true this time last year. And their issue was not like a lack of talent. It was just they couldn't assemble this group into the right positions and roles and responsibilities. And so they didn't have like a functioning receiving core. But I think that could be good. I don't have a ton of faith in Jalen Hurts being anything other than a below average starting quarterback. And I don't think the Eagles do either, to be honest. I think they basically said, well, we don't love the options available now. We're going to trade for next year and turn the keys to Jalen Hurts. And if he surprises us, great. It means we can load up elsewhere. And if he doesn't, we've got enough ammunition to target the quarterback next year that we do really like. So I think they've basically thrown him out there almost as a kind of sacrificial lamb this season. And their strategy overall is focused on next year's draft and what they can build a year from now. But I think there's too much talent like on the roster overall for them to be a disaster. I think they'll be an average, below average team.
Okay. It's weird because Howie Roseman has long been a key proponent of analytics and talked about embracing it. And Philly's one of those, I think, franchises that has been early on it. And Jeff Lurie's big on it. But it also feels like his approach to the quarterback position at times over the last, I don't know, 5 years or whatever has maybe been anti-analytical, or trading a bunch of picks to go get Carson Wentz, then trading Carson Wentz for more picks and going to Jalen Hurts, using a second rounder on a guy when you have Carson Wentz in the building and think he's the answer. How would you grade his approach there?
I think the Eagles generally have made a lot of moves that from a process standpoint have been sound, and almost all of them haven't worked out. Like they've kind of gotten stupidly unlucky with the way they've approached things. The one, trading up, all of the data says that trading up is always a bad idea unless it's for a quarterback, right? Like always trade down if you can, but if you're going to trade up, you can still make good if you get a franchise quarterback, a transformative franchise quarterback. And briefly, it looked like Carson Wentz was that guy, right? Yeah. The 2017 MVP caliber season, they win a Super Bowl at the end of it. Okay, he didn't, but the process made sense. And then Wentz fell apart.
Yeah.
Even then, drafting a guy in the second round that you think is a potential quarterback down the line, I think the analytics would say that's a good move, right? You bring in a backup plan, you bring in a contingency, and also if it turns out he's really good, it's a guy you could potentially flip down the line for like a first round pick, and you can upgrade your draft capital that way. So I don't think we would criticize the Jalen Hurts move. And then Wentz like completely falls to pieces, and the problem is you've already given him the big money contract. I think that's the bad move. But even with that, like the earlier you get that deal done, the cheaper it is, right? So there's a tension between how much time do you need to be sure that quarterback is your guy versus how early do you get it done, because that takes dollars off the figure. And both them and the Rams effectively went too far to that side, right?
Those guys were awesome. Jared Goff and Carson Wentz were awesome. Like high level top 10 NFL quarterbacks, they get paid and then just it's crazy.
So both teams jump on get the early deal done, get it as cheap as possible, and then move on. And both guys have fallen apart since. But at that point, the only thing you can do is get him rid of him. And then it's a case of where's the next quarterback coming from? And they obviously just didn't like enough quarterbacks at the top of this draft to take a Justin Fields or a Mac Jones or a Trey Lance. And it's not like they decided, well, we just won't have a quarterback then. They've obviously clearly swung all the resources towards next year where, they may love the quarterbacks better. And if that's their approach, let's load up next year, we'll muddle through this year, but we'll get the quarterback we want next year. I don't hate the process.
All right. Fair enough. It's over under 6.5 for the Eagles then.
Yeah, I think it's in the right kind of area. Again, I don't think they'll be terrible. I think 6-7 wins is about where they should be. And if you're going to pick one, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's go over.
All right. I would lean, if I was picking, if I was forced to bet on this, I wouldn't bet the Eagles number. I would probably go under, but I think there's pathways for Dallas and New York to be bad. And a pathway for Washington to be bad too, not as wide a one. But if that happens, then the Eagles could steal some wins in the division, and all of a sudden you easily get to 7-10, and that's not a great season, but right. it would cast you over. Okay, awesome stuff, man. Sam Bonson at PFF underscore Sam. Go to pff.com and check out all the loads of data that you guys have put up over there. Certainly developed into one of the premier analytical sites in professional football. Appreciate the time, dude.
Appreciate having me on. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, man. Talk to you soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.